Morning, everyone. Morning. I feel like we're like swung way out there. Just want to aim at you guys. There's some seats over there if you're looking that side. The kids filled it and then they left. So they left you a suite right in the front. I spit a little bit when I talk, but it's okay. Welcome. If you don't have a Bible, why don't you raise your hand? We'd love to get you one. If you don't have a Bible, like at home, you can keep that. Or if you just want to, you can keep it as well and add it to your pile. That's the one that we preach out of. It's the NIV. I'm pumped to be together. This is the start of a new year. We have some exciting stuff coming up as a church community. Obviously, there's the stuff that Christine talked about, but there's a lot of stuff stirring in us as a leadership team and as a staff and elders, and we're really excited to launch out into a year together that you'll hear about over the next couple of weeks. But before we get into that stuff, welcome to 2019, first Sunday of the year. It's kind of wild to say 2019. It sounds space-aged a little bit to me. I hope you had a really good Christmas and New Year sort of celebration, but we're here, and we're in that new time of year where we're sort of past all of the family times, we're past all the celebrations, we're heading back from whatever travel times that we had, or time off, or heading back to a grind of work again, but it's different because it's a new year. It's like a new year and a new you. It's January, there's dry January that's become like an annual thing, where no alcohol at all for the whole month of January, and a sort of detox that's like applies to sugar, I think, as well. So there's like no sugar, no alcohol. So everyone's really grumpy right now. Apparently it's dating Sunday. I just read about this morning. There's a new thing that's happened. I think it comes, this is my own assumption, but I think it comes from the pressures of visiting family, or like if you're single, they're like, why aren't you with somebody? You're a great catch. You need to, so there's like this pressure, and with the dating app world, this Sunday, the first Sunday of the year, is the most used on dating apps ever. So there's like some millions and millions of messages sent through those apps this day. It's like everyone comes home from time with family and they're like, dang it. And they start like swiping, trying to figure it out. So happy dating Sunday. You're not alone if you find yourself there this afternoon. Resolutions are happening, goals, plans, new rhythms, new schedules, new things. There's even like a whole sort of economic. I read this news article on the economics of gym membership, and it's based upon this time of year where everyone gets fired up, gets a gym membership, and then doesn't show up. And so they said if everybody who had a gym membership, which is how much money it takes to run the gym, and they all showed up, it wouldn't work. But they're banking on the fact that you're going to show up and then not in a couple of weeks. So you're subsidizing everybody else that goes for the other 11 months out of the year, and it's like part of the model. So some of us just got new gym memberships, and we're excited for a couple of weeks with that. It's like a whole thing. It's a whole time of year where we set out with resolutions that have broad-reaching kind of implications, even apparently on our economy. My question for us, my thinking for us is, the whole entire sort of beginning of a year can be based on this idea, and you can actually set up for something and set out to do something and never actually do it, or just sort of flame out along the way, because there's all these intentions and all this excitement and all this like purpose heading into a new year and a new season like this. Or you could even be like pursuing the wrong things that aren't the things for you anyway, or never actually make the space and the time to do them. And what I want to do this morning is take a morning together as a church community to talk about how do you enter a new year as a community that follows Jesus? How do you enter a new year well? How do we set about these things in this new season and a new calendar year well? How do you start off well following Jesus together are some of the big questions that I have. And it's questions that Jen and I have been asking a lot of each other and of ourselves and of our family. I'm excited to bring our whole church community into this kind of thinking together. And so what I want to do is share some scriptures with you guys. I want to share a little bit about how Jen and I do this, just sort of as an example. I want to call our church intentionally into a week, into 7 days of entering a new well with intentionality and open ourselves up to the Spirit and what God would have for us. So if you were here last year, we did this for 21 days, and we called the church to a 21-day fast. We're going to compress that into 7. So it's a triple-down experience of intentionality if you did it with us last year. So listen up and lean in, because I think God actually has some really powerful things for us, not only this morning, but for this week as a whole, as he's leading us into a new year. So if you have a Bible, turn to Mark chapter 1. And we'll start there. You know, even as we jump into it, I think, even as we bring it up, like, I'm aware of the things in the room. Because there's probably some of us that you're like, I already made my plans. Thank you. Like, I shouldn't have come this morning. I could have gone to the beach. You know what I mean? Or you're here and you're like, oh, I totally decided I don't do resolutions anymore because I can't keep those things, so this is a waste of my time anyway. Or, there's somewhere maybe in between that spectrum, right? Or, like wherever you're at as you come in, man, I just encourage you to open your hands and open your heart and see what God has for you as he meets you in that place. There's a almost a sense of, like, returning to, like, the basics. There's an infamous story of the golfer, the famous pro golfer, Jack Nicklaus, that in his, like, prime and really throughout his career, every year at the beginning of the season, he would go back to his coach, and he would start over with his lessons. And he would go to his coach because over the course of the year, things drift, like, slowly. How you hold the club, the grips, the swing, the moves. And he would start over and say, teach me as if I've never held a golf club. And his coach would be like, okay. And, like, you know what I mean? Can you imagine the first time? Like, the master. Here's how you hold it. And you want to think about your glove and the grip. And he would walk him through the whole thing every year and sort of realign the whole thing. It's almost like that. It's like a realigning in a new year. What is all the stuff that I bring into it and where we're going and how is God speaking into that moment? So I encourage you to that as we jump into Mark 1. Let's look at verse 29. Okay. As soon as they left the synagogue, they went with James and John to the home of Simon and Andrew. Simon's mother-in-law was in bed with a fever, and they immediately told Jesus about her. So he went to her, took her hand, and helped her up, and the fever left her, and she began to wait on them. That evening, after sunset, the people brought to Jesus all who were ill and demon-possessed, and the whole town gathered at the door, and Jesus healed many who had various diseases, and he also drove out many demons, but he would not let the demons speak because they knew who he was. Man, there are so many things in that paragraph we could talk about. But I want to talk about the next thing. Very early in the morning, the next day, so they're up real late healing everybody and casting out demons all night. Very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. And Simon and his companions, when they woke up, they went to look for him. And when they found him, they exclaimed, "Everybody is looking for you." And Jesus replied, "Let's go somewhere else." Think about that response. Jesus, it's happening. Everybody's looking for you. Let's do it. They're lined up. He's like, good, let's go somewhere else. That was his response. Let's go somewhere else to the nearby villages so I can preach there also. That is why I've come. And so he traveled throughout Galilee, preaching in their synagogues and driving out demons. It's Mark 1. It's the beginning of Jesus' ministry. He leaves the synagogue. He teaches. So there's a bit of, like, momentum around that as he's beginning his healing ministry. He goes back, he heals Peter's mom because they're at Peter's mom's house. She gets out of bed because she has a fever. And then she begins, like, preparing a meal, serving them. And it says, then everybody in the town brings all the sick people and all the demon-possessed people before Jesus. And then he, like, transforms the house into a sort of, like, headquarters and starts just healing and casting out demons and healing. And it creates such a ruckus in the sense of excitement about a movement of God that everybody from all the neighboring villages and countryside, everyone comes rushing in because there's a healer and there's a chance that we could be healed. So anybody sick, anybody demon-possessed, all come crowding into the village overnight. So there's a sense in which, like, a almost like an Eminem song, like, this is your chance, like, this is your moment. I played that for my boys for the first time. I took them to Magic Mountain for my oldest son's birthday, and on the way, right before we pulled in, I'm like, it's time to introduce you to Eminem. We have to get fired up right now. There are clean versions of those songs. There's explicit versions. We found both. So we had other conversations on the way to the park. But it's like that. This is your chance, the momentum, the moment. Don't blow it. Right? I'm not going to start rapping, but I could. And so, I mean, this is like a, like, as an itinerant minister, like, the crowds are coming to you. You're not going to them, right? This is your chance. This is your moment. They could throw up the tent, set up some service times, could build this building. Like, this thing is happening right here. We do it. And so there's, imagine the kind of pressure that's on him, even. right? Imagine the cultural pressure that's on him in that Jewish society in that time. Imagine the pressure from the people that are coming to get healed. Like, we traveled all night to get here. You're going to heal us. Imagine the pressure from his disciples. Like, this is what we've been waiting for. We've already set up the tent. Like, why? You know what I mean? And what does he do? He gets up early before the day starts. He goes up onto the mountain, it later tells us, which was his habit. And he prays and he seeks the Father and he gets like radical clarity on what he's supposed to be doing that day, which is not what everybody else wants him to do. And so they come to him, they're like, let's do it. And he's like, no, I don't think so. I think we should go to the next town. And because this is why I've come. Notice it's like, this is why I've come. There's a reason that I've come, and it's not to be dependent upon what everybody else is telling me to do. Everybody had demands that he could have easily given into, his friends and the crowd and the sick and the circumstances. There's like unforeseen cultural forces driving him, unforeseen forces that are sort of pushing him, and he can live in reaction. He can live in like sort of projection. Like, there's a lot of things that he could live into, but instead he gets up early to pray, to be in the presence of the Father and to center himself and to seek what was next. And the next day he walked away from it all and he went somewhere else because he said, that's why I've come, which means he's driven by a very different force and a very different energy, and he has a very different focus, which is kind of wild how laser sharp he is in the midst of all of that pressure and chaos, because it's coming from everybody, even his closest people, and he says, no, I know why I've come, and it's time to go be about it. He was laser focused. Everything in the world demanded of him something, and he said, I'm going to do something else, because I know exactly who I am and where I'm supposed to be and what I'm supposed to be doing. And that's wild focus, and it wasn't a one-off. It wasn't like, man, he nailed it that time. But the next week, the whole thing is a pattern of Jesus living this way. His entire life and his entire ministry is this radical focus and intentionality living in this way. Look at Luke chapter 6, verse 12. It says, on one of those days, Jesus went out on a mountainside to pray, and he spent the whole night praying to God. Not just the morning before, but he had such a big decision before him. He actually prayed all night long. And when morning came, he called his disciples to him, and he chose 12 of them whom he designated apostles. And it goes on to name them all. So he had to choose 12 from amongst this crowd that is following him, his people. And it says in order to do that, to choose the 12 that would eventually become the core of the church to carry the thing on in terms of like leadership, it says that he went up on the mountainside and prayed all night long so the first thing in the morning he would call them. It's a pattern. It's the way that he operated. Luke 5:16 actually tells us that he often withdrew to lonely places and prayed. This is just Jesus. This is what he did. This is how he lived. This is how he operated. The Gospels speak of four specific times that you can read about, but we know that he made a pattern of it and a habit of his entire life. This is how, like, what he did, and this is the energy from which he operated in the world. He started his ministry off with 40 days in the wilderness fasting and seeking the Father, sort of wrestling with like solidifying his calling and what was next as he launched into his ministry. We talked about that last year in the 21-day fast. Sometimes he would pray all night long. Sometimes he'd be up early before the dawn. The busier it got, somehow the more that he found the time to pray, which makes you go, what's going on? And why is he doing it? It's because there's a rhythm and there's a pattern that drives Jesus that I think is like the secret engine room of his life and his ministry and his calling that gave him the ability to do what he did. With everything else was swirling around him. And that's where the life comes from. That's where the intentionality comes from. The Jesus, he always started from a centered place. He always started from a connected place, and he always started from a focused place. He's never driven by the culture. He's never driven by the masses. He's never driven by the voices. He's never driven by the opposition. He's never driven by the haters. He had lots of haters that were constantly hating on him. That existed before Taylor Swift and Kanye and all the worlds that we know. Like, he had people hated him, plotting to kill him and murder him, and he didn't let any of that drive him. The anxiety or the chaos or what anybody else thought or wanted him to do, he was operating from a very centered, very connected place. He pulled away for 40 days before his ministry began, and then he pulled away every day thereafter as he operated in his ministry and what he was called to be and to do, to be connected to the Father in a way that would actually allow him to do exactly what he was supposed to do day by day by day. And I would actually break it down to those three areas is like what's going on underneath the hood of what Jesus is doing, is that he was centered and that he was connected and that he was focused. So there's a sense in which he's like centered and still, and it starts, I think, with being centered and still. There's a psalm, Psalm 46:10. It actually says, "Be still and know that I'm God. I'll be exalted among the nations. I'll be exalted in the earth." Profound. Be still and know that I am God. It's just called to a centering. The Psalms are the prayer book of the people of God. Be still and know that I'm God. A few years ago, we talked about the idea of the vortex of life, that life can be in the day and age in which we live. It's like the Chuck E. Cheese hurricane machine. Have you been in this? It's amazing. They take all these tickets and they put them on the floor and you get in. It's like a giant glass capsule and they close you in and they fire the thing up to like 70 mile an hour winds in a circle and it's like, woo, and they're all grab whatever you can and the kids are just grabbing wildly and whatever you grab is like what you get out of the thing. And life can kind of feel like that. Like you're in a Chuck E. Cheese hurricane vortex machine. Right? Busyness, distraction, obligation, worry, the insanity of everything that we live in and everything that we do to where you can actually live in a sort of reaction or projection of unresolved things. You don't even have time to know what's going on in your own soul, and you're just like grabbing at whatever passes or is in front of you. And often the irony is, as a people, we, instead of slowing down to be still, to know that he's God, to calm it, we speed it up, thinking we'll solve it. We're like, it's a new year. I'm going to add 7 new resolutions on top of the hurricane machine and speed that wind up to buck 20 from 75. You know that? Because I think that would center me. Right? Or like, we need more vacations. I'm going to binge watch Netflix, or I'm just going to develop a dependence on some kind of substance that gets me up in the morning called caffeine and helps me relax at night called alcohol, and I'm going to live in that cycle. And I don't, you know what I mean? Like, and we're like, this is my attempt at calming the vortex. Is it's like a speeding up of things, which is kind of a cultural cycle. But Jesus understands there's like, he gets away to the mountainside and there's just radical calm and there's radical still. And I think the beginning of that is not that you would do anything. It's just that you would be still and that you would breathe and that you'd know that he was God. And there's a power. There's a recentering. There's a reorientation. I read an article a while back on how the subconscious mind works, and they said it's like the greatest supercomputer in that if you load it full of all the information, your subconscious almost needs time to like process all of the things that are going on in it. And often, like, the answers to the things you seek will come later. Like that show House MD. Do you remember this? I realize I feel old. Some of you youngsters in here, but there was a show. Dr. Steph. The whole show is based on he was trying to solve some impossible puzzle of a disorder in someone, and no other doctor could figure it out. And so he would do all the work with his interns of loading up all the information of what's happening in this person. And then the show would inevitably chase some romantic plot or some other thing. And then while he's like chasing somebody down the street, suddenly the answer would come to him. And that it's based on that idea that the way the subconscious works is you need time to let it rest. And you need time to allow it to process. And often, many things resolve or settle or sort of orient themselves, but it'll never happen if you don't have rest. I process my sermons that way. I'll spend Monday and Tuesday, and I'll load up all the information that I can, and I just try to let it settle over Wednesday and not think about it, and then come back to it on Thursday. And I'm like, okay, what's there? And things like rise that I didn't even realize were rising, because you have to be still, and you have to breathe, and you have to allow it to sort of process, like a full stop. And allow the Spirit to do its work in your mind and your heart. And we find Jesus constantly withdrawing to be still and to calm the crazy that's around him, to be still and recognize the presence of the Father, to be still for a realigning and a constant entering into the presence of God. It's the beginning when you slow down and you just stop and recognize that he's God and you're not. And he's got the thing. And I think from there, it kind of moves to the second thing, which I said is like a listening or a receiving. So there's centering and being still, but then there's like a listening and a receiving, which I think is like an actual communing with the Spirit of God. There's a really fascinating passage in the book of John, chapter 5, when Jesus is in a debate with some teachers. Turn there, John 5:16. Jesus is doing things that some of the religious leaders don't like, and so they're persecuting him and getting angry at him. And there's a passage that they provoke him, and he says some very provocative very interesting things to them. Which, I mean, at that point, it could be like any chapter in the Gospels. John 5, 16. It says, so because Jesus was doing these things on the Sabbath, the Jewish leaders began to persecute him. In his defense, Jesus said to them, my Father's always at his work to this very day, and I too am working. For this reason, they tried all the more to kill him. Not only was he breaking the Sabbath, but he was even calling God his own Father, making himself equal with God. Jesus gave them this answer. Very truly, I tell you, the Son can do nothing by himself. He can do only what he sees his Father doing. Because whatever the Father does, the Son also does. For the Father loves the Son and shows him all he does. Yes, and he'll show him even greater works than these so that you will be amazed. For just as the Father raises the dead and gives them life, so even the Son gives life to whom he is pleased to give it. Moreover, the Father judges no one but has entrusted all judgment to the Son. And all may honor the Son just as they honor the Father. Whoever does not honor the Son does not honor the Father who sent him. Very truly I tell you, whoever hears my word and believes in him who sent me has eternal life and will not be judged, but is crossed over from death to life. Man, that's wild what he says. So there's a sense in which he's centering, yes, and there's a sense in which he's being still in the presence of the Father, but there's a different sense altogether in which he's like attentively listening and receiving from the Father to the point that he says, I don't do a single thing that the Father doesn't tell me to do. Like every single thing I do, healing, ministry, action, words, everything that I do day to day to day is only what I hear the Father telling me to do. That's like a radical, he's saying like in that centering and in that calm space, there's an openness and a receptivity to the Father in which he's able to hear and to receive in order to know what he's called to be about, to operate from that centered place. It's why he could operate the way that he did with so many voices. It's why when his like closest, like number two, Peter, is all, no, you can't go to Jerusalem and die. No, why would you do this? And he's like, get behind me, Satan. It's like this intense interaction because he's so clear on what he's called to do and what he's called to be. It's this unreal connection between Jesus and the Father. It's this like listening and sort of receiving space that exists when you create constant spaces of still and constant spaces of calm in God's Spirit. It's why Jesus says in John 15, verse 1, he says, I'm the true vine and my Father's the gardener, and he cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit. While every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes so that it will bear be even more fruitful. You are already clean because of the word I've spoken to you. Remain in me, and I also remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. I'm the vine, you're the branches. And if you remain in me and I in you, you'll bear much fruit. But apart from me, you can do nothing. If you do not remain in me, you're like a branch that's thrown away and withers. Such branches are picked up, thrown on the fire, and burned. But if you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish and it will be done for you. This is to my Father's glory that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. Like Jesus' whole understanding of what it means to be a disciple of his is that you would be constantly abiding, is the language that he uses. You'd be constantly in his presence, that there'd be like a calmness and a centering and a stillness, but that would open up a space of actual, like genuine connectivity to the Spirit of the living God, who's constantly speaking, constantly breathing life, constantly like bringing up things within you that have been like lodged in that need to be forgiven and released and reconciled and let go of, constantly speaking truth of what he's calling you to be and do today and tomorrow and in this season and the next season, constantly drawing you further and further in his presence so that he can transform you to be like him, because the kingdom of God is advancing in the world and he wants you to be a part of it. Like, it's all about abiding. That's why he's saying there's like the same kind of connection that you'll bear fruit. And so there's a centering and a calm, and then there's like a listening and a receiving that comes. And then from that place, what often emerges is what I would call like a focusing and a planning that would come out of it. It's a centering and a stillness, and then there's a listening and a receiving. And I think that gives you a focusing and a planning, like a realization of what you're called to do and what you're called to chase after and what you're called to give your energy in your life to, but also what you're not. To see what the Father's doing that he invites you to join into, but also to understand, like, man, this week, this is what God has for me. Or this year, this is what God has for me. Or this month, this is what God has for me. But this is also not what he has for me. which sometimes isn't like a moral thing. You're like, oh, that's a clear, like, immoral decision. And maybe it's just not what he has for you right now, and he's calling you to something else. There's a focusing that comes from it. Look at Luke 9, 51. This is a turning point in the book of Luke in which a statement gets made about Jesus. Because he's just an itinerant minister with his disciples traveling around the Galilean countryside, and whenever the pilgrimage religious festivals in Jerusalem come up, he travels with them to Jerusalem, and then they come back. But he just is sort of itinerantly moving through the villages, and he's preaching, and all of a sudden there's like a clear moment where we have to be about a very particular mission, and it's time right now. And it says, as the time approached for him to be taken up to heaven, Jesus resolutely set out for Jerusalem. There's another version that says Jesus set his face to go to Jerusalem. And from that point on, the rest of the book is he is going to Jerusalem, and it's everything that happened on the way there. And there's a million things that would pull him away. There's a million people that say, but we need you here, and what about these people need to be healed, and what about these things need to happen, and we haven't made it to those villages yet, and so-and-so needs to whatever. He's like, no, it's time. It's time. I'm going to Jerusalem. So he has this super clear yes so that everything else is no. And I'm going now because this is what I'm called to be. It's a radical focus, and he will not be deterred from that thing. And the rest of the story is how he moves into Jerusalem and ends up giving himself up, goes on the cross, and then is raised from the dead, and then poof, the launch of the movement of the kingdom, right? He like from that place of listening and receiving comes this different focused ability to move forward in action and his plans. And he says the same to us. Look at Luke 14. Jesus is talking about discipleship, and he's talking about the cost of discipleship. But he's really talking about the same thing. He says, large crowds were traveling with Jesus. And turning to them, he said, if anyone comes to me and doesn't hate father, mother, wife, and children, brothers and sisters, yes, even their own life, such a person cannot be my disciple. And whoever doesn't carry their cross and follow me can't be my disciple. He's essentially giving them this intense statement of like count the cost of what it means to follow me. There's not a literal hate your parents here. Suppose one of you wants to build a tower. Won't you first sit down and estimate the cost to see if you have enough money to complete it? For if you lay the foundations and are not able to finish it, everyone who sees it will ridicule you, saying, this person began to build and wasn't able to finish. Or suppose a king is about to go to war against another king. Won't he first sit down and consider whether he's able with 10,000 men to oppose the one coming against him with 20,000? And if he's not able, he'll send a delegation while the other's still a long way off and will ask for terms of peace. In the same way, those of you who don't give up everything you have cannot be my disciples. Salt's good, but if it loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It's fit neither for the soil nor for the manure heap. It's thrown out. Whoever has ears to hear, let him hear. He's essentially saying, if you're going to follow Jesus, then the kingdom becomes your primary priority in your life. And it transcends everything. And so all the old like hierarchies and priorities and whatever you operated on in terms of values in life, now the kingdom of the living God is the highest thing. It transcends your politics. It transcends your nationalities. It transcends all of your things, all of your things that you used to have. And all of a sudden, you're a kingdom person, so you find yourself in very odd circumstances. And he talks about it later, where you kind of identify with these people, but you kind of identify with these people, and you don't really fit into any of them. So Jesus says, I don't have a home. Because that's that understanding. Like, I'm living in this transcended kind of kingdom orientation and worldview. And he's saying, you need to count the cost of what that looks like for your life, is essentially what he says. Count the cost if you're willing to trust Jesus in such a way that you're willing to reorient your whole life around this discipleship, this calling, is the whole point. But the way he illustrates it is really fascinating to me, because he essentially says, like, if this is your goal, then make a plan to do it and execute on it. It's effectively what he's saying. So like, there's a sense in which, like, often I think when we think about being, like, spirit-led, like, we're centering, we're calm, we're still, we're before the Father, we're receiving, we're listening. And then there's like almost like a hyper-mystical sense in which you're like, what God just said, I need to tell you right now. Which happens. I've been there. I've been a part of that. I've been one who's spoken those words, and I've been one who's received those words. But often it's even more encompassing than that. And it's, if this is your goal to follow Jesus and orient your life around it, well, let's just take a step back and let's look at our life. And if you're here, and this is the life that he's calling you to live, then what does it look like to move from here to there? He's like, count the cost, make a plan, execute on that thing. You got a whole lifetime to get there. What does that look like for you? If you're here and you don't live generously, if you're here and you live in a way that you can't give anything to those who are in need, you can't give anything to the kingdom. If you're here, and we're coming to the end of the year, so we're at the new year, I'm sorry. In January, you receive all of your tax documents. So you're about to find out, like you're going to ante up your whole last year financially of what you did. Your budget, the taxes you owe, the taxes owed back to you, your donations to whatever charity, sort of 501c3, all that gets mailed to you. So there's a moment where you can look at it and you can say, this is what I did. Or maybe you won't receive any from any of those organizations. No charitable organization will send you a tax form because you didn't give anything to anybody this year because you just didn't. And you're like, shoot, I want to be generous. But if you get to January next year and you're like, shoot, I want to be generous. And you're like, I'm just going to keep going. But then if you get to January the next year and you're like, shoot, I want to be generous. Like, you're missing something, right? There's a sense in which you have to go, okay, well, if I'm going to get there, well, it's time to break down the budget and look at where everything goes, and you have to make a plan in order to step into that reality. If you say, man, I want to be a person that spends more time in the presence of God at the end of this year, there's a point in which you got to break open the calendar, and you have to go, where am I putting my energy? Where am I putting my time? And where is there space that I could actually spend time in the presence of God and actually do that? Like, there's a sense in which there's a focus of what it means to be a person that follows Jesus, and then there's actually like a plan that you can execute on. It's why we often say, like, train yourself, own your own discipleship. These are phrases that we use as a church community to say, if we're going to live into this, there has to be an intentionality that comes from it. And with the pull of life and the chaos of the vortex that we live in, only when you remove yourself and open yourself up before the Spirit in the calm and you lay everything out and go, if this is who God's calling me to be and this is where I'm at, what are all the things that need to happen between here and there to move on that? And then you can start moving on it. Step at a time, a piece at a time, a moment at a time, a dollar at a time, 10 minutes at a time, a person at a time. You know what I mean? It's like the whole thing is a centering calm that moves to a listening and a receiving that actually allows, and he set his face to go to Jerusalem and nothing deterred him. Right? There's like a movement that happens when we understand that kind of life. But then there's like another sense to it that I love. I won't read it. It's in Mark chapter 9, but there's a story that's pretty fairly well known. Jesus comes down off the mountain. He takes two of his disciples. The transfiguration happened. So he essentially takes his disciples up onto the mountain with him and shows them what it's like to get away in this sense, and they have this radical God encounter. So they come down together. The rest of his disciples are trying to heal a guy who's got a son who has a demon that causes seizures and throws him on the ground and he can't speak. And there's a big crowd around because the disciples are trying and trying. They can't heal him. Jesus shows up. There's really fascinating interactions between Jesus and the guy who can't, whose son hasn't been healed yet. And then Jesus says, well, bring him to me. And then Jesus immediately heals him. And the disciples were freaking out because they're like, why couldn't we do it? Like, you did it. You said we could do it. Why couldn't we do it? And he said, some only come out in prayer and fasting. That's what he said. Some only come out in prayer and fasting. And there's like a whole different sense to time in the presence of God in this sense that's different, almost like a ready for anything. Like a hyper-connectivity to the Spirit in which you can see, like in like a lot of clarity, because there's times when you can see what the Spirit's on about in your life and in those around you with a lot of fog or not at all, or there's like a bunch of clarity in it if you've ever had that experience. And it's almost like he's saying, there's a sense in which if you're connected consistently through prayer, through removing yourself, through times of calm and still, that you can actually be like ready for anything sort of life, like connected to the Spirit in which he's like, this kind of only comes out in prayer and fasting. He was so in tune with the Father that he only does what he sees the Father doing that it was easy for him while the others weren't. It's fascinating, which is why later he says, don't worry about what you're going to say when people ask you because the Spirit will tell you what to say. It's the same idea. It's like a filling and a preparing to be able to do that, like a ready for anything kind of life. And so I think there's those three aspects to it that Jesus constantly withdrew to be with the Father, to slow down and to be centered and to be connected and to be focused and then to actually act from that radical place of calm connection. And it's not just what he did, it's actually the model that he invites us to live as a people as well. And this morning, I want to invite our church community to a week of that together. Obviously a life of that together, but again, if we're here and we're going to move here, let's take a step. A week of that together as a church as we launch into 2019. And what I'd love to do is share just a little bit about how Jen and I are doing this right now as we head into a new year that would hopefully serve as like an example for you guys. This is how we're doing it, but how are you doing it? What does your process look like? What does it look like for you to enter a new year and to live in that kind of intentionality as an individual, as a family, as a community group, as whoever you are as you come into the room right now? And for us, it's about intentionality and rhythms and in practices with like a sort of constant evaluation of what's working and what's not. That's the way that we found for it to work. We can't put a system in place and be like, we'll check in on this thing in a year. This is good. Like if it's like a constant breaking down and a constant evaluating of what's working and what's not, because now we have 5 fully functioning members of the Wood team with their own growing social lives and demands and sports schedules. And it turns out that has a great impact on our life and social life and calendars. And so it requires quite a bit of orchestration to figure out how to do anything, much less find life in it and be connected to the Father, which means a lot of working together and a lot of communication. So this is how I break it down for you. Use this as an example. It starts with quiet spaces and quiet times for us, which is like critical. Quiet spaces and quiet times. For me, it's the idea of reading plans. Not necessarily even just in scripture, but like books. Like what are things that I want to read that are going to bring me life? Because if I'm not intentional about it and I don't know what it is, I'm not going to even know which one to grab off a shelf in the chaos that life can turn into, much less have the time to sit down and read it. It also comes down to the idea of like retreat days and rhythms and like pursuit of like embodying growth goals as someone who's following Jesus. It's about aligning our actions to our like current calling if we're going to do that. And then like a ton of shared accountability in our calendars together is how it works. And so when I talk about like a quiet space and a quiet time, I mean, there's a critical sense that you need a daily space to sit and be still and be in the presence of God. And you need a journal and you need just space. If you don't have that, man, things can like feel chaotic quite quickly, even if you don't realize it. Like a daily centering that actually requires planning and it requires preparing. So if you're gonna do that in the morning for us, it's like a shared agreement. Okay, in the morning, we gotta get kids dressed, we gotta get kids to school, we still wanna like exercise and work out, we have to have lunches made and we have to be out the door by a certain time, so who's getting up when? And we actually talk through all of those kinds of details of like, what does that look like? It means like preparing the night before in order to have that space in the morning, which means it's like a family commitment if you're gonna pursue spiritual practices and have the space to do them, because it's not just gonna happen. So there's conversation around that and creating consistent rhythms and times that we have together. Then there's, like I said, a reading plan. I got a lot of books that I am reading and that I wanna read. I love reading scripture and I love to read a lot of other things, and at any given point, I'm like halfway into 15 or 20 different books at a time, and I've got 2 shelves in my office that is just books I'm gonna read. And I love to read, but that can also be really like scatterbrained and sort of distracting at times. And so I've got too many that I wanna read. And so I'm in the process of actually creating a spreadsheet. Sounds like a nerd alert, I know. Spreadsheet, nerd alert, I'm here. Of all the things that I wanna read, and I'm putting them in the priority that I wanna read them over the course of this year, because if I don't, I'm not gonna. I could be like, I want to read that shelf. And then in February, I'm like, that shelf looks good. Look at those books on there. And then there's 3 more on there. How do they get there? You know what I mean? Or you can create like a priority in the things you want to read and then actually scheduling the times to read them. Eugene Peterson is a pastor that I love. He passed away recently. He's like a pastor to pastors. And he had this advice in one of his books for pastors. He's like, if you really want to like spend time pouring into the scripture, and you want to spend time pouring into your preparations for your teachings, you want to spend time pouring into these books that can grow you in order to lead the organization. He's like, people don't like necessarily respect that. They're like, what? You can't meet with me right now because you're reading the Bible or you're preparing a message. You can do that later. He's like, so instead, you call it an appointment. He's like, in my calendar, it says appointment with Paul, and it's the Apostle Paul. And he's like, and everyone in our day and age, for some reason, has great respect for the calendar. And they're like, ooh, he's got an appointment. I don't want to infringe on that. And so I laughed so hard when I read it, but I've taken it to my calendar, and I'm like, that's reading time for that 30 minutes. That's reading time for that 15 minutes. Because if you don't do it, the chaos and the swirl of life will pull you 1,000 different ways. So I got to be intentional if I'm going to read and study in that sense. Then I said there's like retreat days and rhythms. There's like just plain old retreat days. Not time for vacation, not time to check out, but to actually like get away in order to dig in deeper is the way that I would describe it. And for me, it's a few hours a week that I build into a schedule that I can do that. It's a day a month that I've built in to do that, and I've got processes that I go through when I do those things. And then hopefully in an ideal world, it'd be like a weekend a year where I can process everything that's happening in my soul, in my life, in my family, in our church, in our staff, in the vision, in the direction, in the teaching, and like the whole thing. You got to have space to come out of it and rise above to go, God, what are you doing? Is this where we're at? Have we gotten into a different place that we shouldn't be? What needs to be adjusted? The reason I have that giant van, I built it as like a retreat machine. I did. I put a little table that pops up. It's like a mobile office. I can park it anywhere and have space just to be in the presence of God because it's that important to me. And then there's just like pursuit of like embodiment growth goals is what I call it. It's my own weird language. And what I mean is like I got lots of discipleship goals and growth goals for myself and my family and for our church. I want to grow in my generosity. I want to grow in my pursuit of following Jesus. I want to be more forgiving. I want to be less irritable. I want to be more compassionate and more connected and in tune in very practical ways of living a resurrection kind of a life. And that stuff's not just going to happen. Like there's spiritual practices and times and all these things that I'm talking about, like putting them in place actually allows us to step in and to become these people. It means like if I'm going to be more generous, then it requires like, so what, if that's my goal, how am I going to make moves in that sense practically? If I'm going to be more reconciling and forgiving, like who do I need to be reconciled with? I need to make a list of that. I need to start calling people. Remember one day I had like four people on a list I needed to reconcile with, and I just mustered up the energy and picked up the phone. I'm like, it's going to be a real emotionally draining day, but I'm going to call everybody. You know what I mean? And it felt fantastic that night, but like it's like growth goals. If we're not even aware of how we're trying to grow in our discipleship, much less setting the goals, how are we going to get there? My boys right now, they're getting of age. Like my oldest son is 12, 10, and 6, and Jen and I have been processing through how do we create a rite of passage for the boys from this age all the way through till they're 18 and they leave the house of a consistent rhythm of connection. And the older they get, the more complicated their calendars and lives get. And what we found is that the afternoons are gone because of their sports now, where there isn't time to be together, and in the evenings, and the only time that works now is in the morning. But we've set up a rhythm and a schedule for our lives where we take turns like going to work out in the morning because it like brings life, right? And so something that's bringing me the most life that I've ever had right now in terms of just like feeling like healthy and alive, I need to stop that at the time that I'm doing it because it's the only time that I can spend with my boys. And so we're shifting a time now where I'm going to find somewhere else to exercise during the day. And it's going to be like a family commitment to shift all of these things. We have to have like a family meeting about it that we've been in process about. And I'm going to wake the boys up a little earlier than they normally do to have a block of time. We can be very intentional, not only about our relationship, but about who they're becoming as kids that are following Jesus. And it means like a whole orientation shift of our calendar in order to pull it off. Otherwise, we're going to get to the end of the year and go, man, we never did that. So it's like a whole shift of if these are our like discipleship growth goals, how do we step into those things? And what are we going to do to get there? And it's like being honest, daily, weekly, monthly, even annually, of how we do that, making a plan for intentionality and how we step into it. And we know this because like anything that you give yourself to, this is the reality. If you want to grow in your, like some kind of music that you do, you have to schedule practice and give yourself to it. If you want to grow in like some sort of fitness thing, it's the same thing. Anything that you would give yourself to, you have to set these kinds of goals and actually pursue it intentionally in that way. And then I would say you just have to like actually execute on that thing and make a plan to align your actual lifestyle with like the current calling, because there's just more things to do than you could possibly pull off, right? And so on the way home last night from a family visit, Jen was like, you have a lot of goals this year, and you cannot do all of these goals. She's like, so which ones are you going to do, and which ones are you not going to do? And that's the moment where you actually have to align your actions with your current calling. And you have to say, okay, this is what I'm called to, and this is the first thing, because this is the most important thing that I'm going to give my life to, and the rest of it's going to have to be sort of held underneath that as you have to prioritize it. And then we like hold each other accountable in that sense together. There's like a shared calendar accountability. I share my calendar with all my work stuff, with the whole staff, and even the elders, so that they know where I'm at any given point. And I say, this is the things I'm going after. And they're like, well, let's do it. And there's like a shared accountability that we're going after the things that we say. And then Jen and I share a calendar at home as well in terms of our social life, our like all these spiritual goals and things that we're after. And there's like a constant shared sense of this is the things that we're going after. So how do we actually give ourselves to it consistently? How do we give ourselves consistently to it? And this is how we've learned to operate. This is our like getting up early in the morning and going to the mountain. If we're going to like give ourselves to following Jesus, to stay centered and connected and focused in our life and in our action. And so I have an invitation for us as a church community as we head into a new year together as well. What does that look like for you? What does it look like for you? I'm inviting us as a church to a week of like focused, intentional space in the presence of God that would set you up for a new year, like a hyper-focused week of going up on the mountain effectively as a community so that we can set out into a sense of intentionality together as a church, as the people that are following Jesus. So what does that look like for you as we're talking about setting a trajectory for 2019 as we're seeking the presence of God together this week, kind of a going up on the mountain together as a church? Last year we did 21 days. This year it's 1 week. And I'm calling you to a week of prayer. I'm calling you to a week of fasting. I'm calling you to a week of like intentional focus with the Spirit of the living God who is in our midst as we seek to align our lives with what God has for us this year. And maybe you're here and you have lots and lots of plans already. That's fantastic. I do too. I have too many. I actually realize I have too many. Or maybe you're here and you haven't given a lot of thought and maybe you're kind of overwhelmed by all this. That's okay. You can take a step. It's not a resolution kind of week. I would call it more of a week of going up to the mountain and actually laying your whole self before the Father and asking him, man, what's he calling you to in 2019? And how can you align your life to that calling? What does it look like for you? If you're like me and you already have a bunch of plans and it's a week to lift them all up before the Father and be like, okay, this is what I'm thinking. You know what I mean? What do we got? Like, give it to me. And it's this really fun week where we can bring it all before the Father together as a community and actually set a trajectory together of spiritual practices and rhythms and times and life in the Spirit and preparing and planning to live into this life that he's called us to. How can you step into that this week and actually do it? I'd encourage you fast. Fast. We've done it a ton as a church community, fast, which is just stripping stuff away to make space for the Spirit. And maybe that's food for you. Maybe it's like a one-day fast that you can do, or maybe it's a two-day fast or a three-day fast. Maybe it's like a partial fast over the course of the week. Maybe you can adopt whatever you're already doing into this and sort of modify it to be more intentional this week with what God's doing in our midst. Maybe it's media or distraction. Just like make space is the point. And then create like an intentional like daily space in the presence of God where you get alone. Like calendar it. Throw it on your calendar and say, this Monday, I'm gonna do it this time. Tuesday, I'm gonna do it this time. Wednesday, I'm gonna do it this time. And bring a journal and get there and pray and just open yourself up before the Father and be centered and be still and listen and ask and write down everything you sense or feel or what stirs or scriptures or things that rise in your heart that you feel like God's leading you to, and write down the dreams and goals that are stirring, and then like talk about it with your spouse, talk about it with your friends, talk about it with your community group, and then like be bold and take out a calendar and start making a plan. Be bold and take out a budget and start making a plan. It's first things first. Let's start with first things first and then let everything fill in from there. And then next week when we get together as a church, we're going to share about it. I'm going to invite you to share. What's God doing? What's he speaking to you? How is he speaking it? What's he doing? We're going to share some of the stuff that our church is excited about and where we're heading as well. We have a huddle before church, half hour before, 9:30, where we pray into what's happening in the gathering. It's going to be a space to share there and then even a space to share together on the Sunday morning. But I say, let's put first things first and then let everything else fall into place around that. And this week, let's go up on the mountain together. Let's see what God has for us as those that follow him and as a community. Let's see what he has for us. Let's take space to be in his presence. Let's lift our lives and all of these things up to him. Let's see what he has for us. I'm pumped. I'm pumped to see what God has. So I'm gonna invite the worship team to come up and to join us and to lead us in a response as we worship. Father, I pray that you would just continue to speak and breathe life. I pray that you would continue to just to minister to us, Father. I pray that you would speak truth and life, that you breathe life. I pray that you would continue to inspire us, Father, to meet us where we are as you continually shape us and transform us forward, Father. And I pray that you would just capture and captivate our hearts and our minds and our imagination of what you're up to in this new year and how we can join into that, Father. So meet us as we worship and respond to you.